Ooh, Saturday afternoon. Welcome, Pencil Busters. Well, you know, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Chairman of the Board, Jacob. We are all gathered here on a Saturday after the Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, there's a campground right where I'm now about to relocate my place as I'm now about to live in Pennsylvania. I notice everybody is heading to the beach at the campground, and I thought it must be summer. I thought there was some type of hint there that it must be summer. So the Saturday after Memorial Day, summer is on. Johnny, that means, you know, as we used to in the old program, as Seven Dust copying Alice Cooper, school's out for summer, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's getting close. It's that time of year, Tim. Jacob and I were talking about it on the Memorial Day show this weekend, long weekend. So here we are on Saturday. It's still May, which is kind of a weird feeling, Tim, for me. I'm used to Memorial Day ending the month and not having another full week of May, but I'm digging it. It's not quite June yet. We're here on the final day of May, chatting it up. A couple of educated educators talking education. Mm-hmm. But you know, Tim, just to unconfuse things, we're sort of colloquially, if that's even a word, I don't know. Colloquially?
Jacob, can you check him on that?
Yes, I've got it right here, Johnny. It's cloaca. You're thinking of cloaca.
That must be it. But anyways, I say like kind of, we talked about Memorial Day being, you know, kind of an official start to summer, not the scientific official one, but the cultural one, because the summer solstice, we know, doesn't happen until June 20th. Mm. The 20th, 21st, 26th. Sometimes, depending on where you live and what time zone you're listening from, it's that time of year, mid, like the 20th around there of June, the summer solstice. But unofficially, Tim, I think you're right. Most of us educators are thinking it's close to those days. If it's not happening already, I know that I have some friends around the country now, family I'm friends with down in Texas. Their son had his last day of school today. Some teachers that I work with in other parts of the country are winding things down next week. I know here in Washington, it's mid-June that the schools are out for summer. But we're in that mode, school being out for summer. So we could talk a little bit today about, hey, what do you do in what I call the off season? Because it's really not, you're really not out of school or not working, just the labor changes. And as educators, we think differently about, okay, it's the off season. What are we gearing up for as we head into back to school in the fall? I don't want to go there yet. So
don't go there yet, because what you're thinking, making me think about though, is you know, my time as a K-12 classroom teacher, you're actually the gearing up for the last day of school is in and of itself a gearing up. And not that I did this, but I know that at the time you could find lots of K-12 teachers in Blockbuster that last week of school.
Man, that's a relic of the past. That's a relic of the past. The Blockbuster video.
Blockbuster video.
Did you bring them home and play them on your Victrola, Tim?
You know, I hooked them up to my hamster on the spin wheel and got them going there.
After you got a telegram from downtown on what day school was actually going to end.
No, but think about that, right? I mean, you know, people are like, all you teachers do the last week of school is show movies and take kids out for recess. Nah. But, you know, I remember
we also clean out desks. And we also, well, I'm going to date myself. We clean the erasers and make sure the boards are all ready for. Oh, you know, it is the time, though, where we wind things down in the classroom, you know. And I would say, Tim, you know, after Memorial Day, every year I was teaching and all the classrooms I'm visiting, we're still learning. We talk about that all the time. I hate that idea of lost learning time. Yeah. It's like, come on, kids are learning when we're together. It's also important to learn to transition. So we're gearing up for like, what's the next few months going to look like? And how can you begin to think about what the fall's going to look like? You know, so you're thinking about meeting the teachers from the net, like that you might have next year. There may even be doing some classroom days where like you go visit the classroom you're going to be in next year.
You're talking from the kid perspective here.
Yeah. Even the teachers. I mean, that's the thing is like this month or so or weeks, however far out from that school's out for summer day. Right. I know you referenced the Seven Dust version, but I'm a Detroit boy, man. I'm an Alice Cooper to end on that, you know, but you know, that's a special day, but we're, you know, teachers are, they're planning still, they're still learning. It's just different kind of learning. It's sort of like the curriculum is wrapped up for the year. What do we got going on for the transition that we're preparing kids for, whether it's their summer, whether it's, you know, into summer terms, but it is always followed by a fall coming up.
Well, don't go there yet, though. I teachers listening to the show right now are like, Dr. Johnny, wait a minute, dude. Don't be talking fall. We're just about ready to go into summer, man. Don't get us there.
I'm gonna be that voice of grimness that I'm not usually, but I know I'm in a lot of classrooms. We talked about it a couple Saturdays ago. Like I'm in my pre-off season. The beginning of my off season is where I talk to all the teachers I can, right? As many as I can sit down with and have a conversation about what are the things that went well this year? What didn't go well? What would they like to learn more of? What would they like to share? As you know, we plan to, you know, to teach more teachers and to support teachers out there and work with principals. So I'm still in that phase, but Tim, I'm going to relate back to our teaching days. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about what's something that's kind of scaring me. And it's making me a little bit worried for the end of the school year because we just talked about the kind of fun stuff and that's all still happening. But teachers are under a lot of stress. We know that.
Yeah, they are.
But I'm going to connect. Tim, do you remember when we were teaching? It was usually around February or March. These are the good old days, the golden days. No, they weren't. But, you know, this is how when Tim and I were teaching, you know, there was – you know, states did their budget. And we talked this week a little bit about the Wisconsin state legislation finishing, you know, kind of their budget cuts and the kind of things they did to Governor Evers' proposals, you know, and ditching the important stuff that actually helps schools care for kids. But put that aside, it's asinine to me that we are in the end of May and still doing budget stuff. Is back in the day, not that it was better, but remember February? Mm-hmm. It was like February, March. And as a newer teacher, something that was always in my mailbox around that time of year, it just put an awful feeling in my stomach. But I'd get the pink slip. Do you remember the pink slip, Tim? Did you guys have pink slips?
They weren't pink, but keep going.
So we'd get pink slipped in Michigan. And this is and what would happen is like the budget would come out. And there would be cuts. And anybody who was in a certain level of seniority, like new teachers and different things, who before we really knew what kind of money we could move around and hire and have for the fall, people got pink slipped, which meant you might not be teaching here in the fall.
That's encouraging.
No, it sucks.
No, I know.
And it was like clockwork right around February, March, but you knew. And you kind of knew after a few years, like, hey, this is a seniority thing. Most of you will get hired back when we have the count for who's coming back to school in the fall, who's retiring, who's moving on, who might be moved to a different school, what kinds of things happen. But there was like, you know, kind of a heads up, like you're not protected. You might not be back here next year. And unions did a pretty good job of mediating that and letting you know, especially for those with seniority. Mm-hmm. You might not get pink slipped, but you know, budget cuts determined how many teachers were rehired and kind of the lay of the land for employment for the following year. And I have to imagine, like, I used to hate it. February would roll around, that would happen, a big chunk of us. And then when I had cleared that with seniority, it was, you know, talking to the new bloods,
right?
Saying, hey, you know, this is something we go through. Just try not to let it worry you, which they're like, man, am I working here next year or am I not? It wasn't the greatest system. But it would happen like clockwork because the budget would be set around February, March. Well, here we are, it's May. Mm-hmm. And budgets are still being set. And there, I would say, kind of record pressures to cut back even more. I mean, we talked about it in the class and session this week, the I would say devastating cuts Wisconsin is dealing with,
right,
and other states as well. Well, I'm talking to a lot of teachers, Tim, who are telling me, you know, I'm kind of worried about these budget cuts. And if I'm coming back to this school next year, or if I'll be, so it's the end of the school year. And there's a fair amount of teachers out there who aren't certain if they're going to be working in the fall. This is just a terrible labor condition.
Yeah.
For important people, I would say defending democracy, frontline workers, mandatory workers in our community, teachers who are not quite sure. I mean, it's May, we're going into June, and budgets are just being kind of unveiled.
Right.
And so that means like districts now are dealing with, okay, how much, who do we have? Like, how can we have special education in our building? And if so, how many teachers can we have? How many parapros? What kind of supports? What are the class sizes looking like? That's stuff we used to do in February, March.
Yeah.
It's now the end of May, and we don't quite know in a lot of districts what's happening for next year. So this is that's another kind of like just reading the pulse of the front lines right now. Okay. Teachers are saying, hey, I'm kind of worried about this because I'm not even sure what next year looks like at this school. So to me, that's kind of like one of those things like, yeah, it's summer, we're celebrating the end of the school year. And a lot of us used to remember thinking about the fall, but man.
I mean, if you're sitting there, yeah, like you just said, right, you don't know. And then I'd say combine that with also the message. So you imagine you don't have a job, but yet we're still hearing about the massive teacher shortage nationwide in different places. And so, yeah, to be a teacher today is to really to be able to, as Joanne, Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanne always try to remind, to try to remain regulated. What in right. the world are we doing
How hard
here?
Is that task?
Man, you cannot. It just makes it tough. But you know what, though, Johnny, before we go to the break, let's bring everybody in, though, and go. But we are excited here as we're about to, like you say, hit the summer months, do those summer things that are going to be incredibly, hopefully, allowing teachers to gain some of that self-regulation back so that they can be ready to hit it hard in the fall. Oh, so much. Johnny, lots of news going on. Just want to say, hey, can you sue if your kid can't read? We covered that story. We're going to talk about that because you might be, well, maybe you won't be surprised, but we've got an answer. And Johnny, I got some AI news for you, man. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's
I'm going to ask on the break. I'm going to go type into AI. Who's Sue?
Who's Sue? Oh, you know, a girl named Sue. Busted Pencil. A boy named Sue. Johnny Cash. Busted Pencil's back after the break. We're back. You know, Tim, Johnny, and Jacob, the Busted Pencils crew. Yeah, we're fully leaded education talkers. We're the educated educators who, yeah, we talk education. Saturday, you know, we talked about it, you know, beginning of summer, teachers are winding down. You know, they can see that, you know, the last day of school, the school's out for summer anthem will be playing all across this country in the coming weeks. And you know what, though, teachers, you've deserved it. Go out there, take a break this summer, refuel for that mental health, man, and get ready for the fall, because guess what? Those kids, those families, and our communities, you, the defenders of democracy, the engaging educators that prepare the future to actually thrive and to hopefully, you know, kind of say they're going to look back on these times and go, man, what was going on with the adults during those times? They were picking some funny people to be in charge of them. You know, funny people, let's just call them funny people. But Johnny, you know, here's the, you know, we've been covering this, and you say Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, favorite on the show, going to work on trying to get her next week for the show, because we got to hear her take on this. But news today out of Boston, and what is it? Judge dismisses Reading Wars lawsuit against famed literacy specialists. And for anybody who's going, what are they talking about? This is the lawsuit up in Boston where parents were suing Balanced Literacy, a curriculum put together by Lucy Calkins, and two other researchers who put together reading programs that have been used extensively across this country to help with teachers to help them teach reading. It's a curriculum. And based on, and we say another favorite guest of ours, Dr. Paul Thomas, you know, the nonsense of the reading wars, the idea that a curriculum is at fault and therefore the creators or the researchers who put together these teaching practices are to blame for a child's inability or stunted reading. Well, that's what parents in Boston were trying to do. They were trying to sue the authors of Balanced Curriculum, the publishers, and the testing distributing centers. And the judge said, you can't do that. It's a curriculum. It is implemented in different ways. And the reality that actually the overwhelming evidence is that kids that have been taught with this curriculum, they reads okay. There's just nothing there compelling to say that the curriculum and or the writers, the authors, the researchers have any liability to students who experience reading problems. Okay, so in other words, what this really came from, though, Johnny, just remind everybody, this was really pushed by science of reading backers who want nothing but their curriculum and their guides and their materials to be mandated and used for the teaching of reading, and to have Balanced Literacy, Lucy Calkins, Fenelis and Pontus, the other one, I'll come back, get their curriculum out of the schools to make room for our curriculum. And I think for that point, the judge, and of course he ruled on the merits that, sorry, the curriculum didn't cause that, but I'm hoping that the judge also saw through this and saying, these are the science of reading people trying to get a lawsuit to then leverage to get their curriculum mandated in schools, and therefore then cash in on those districts who, Johnny, you have to remind everybody too, are already strapped for cash. But hey, if we can go to that piggy bank and if we can get our curriculum mandated, man, we stand to make a lot of money. And that's really what the reading wars have always been about. That's my take, Johnny, bringing you up to date there.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm glad to hear, because I mean, this is just my own personal stance. I'm about fed up and tired of the, I'm suing you, you're getting sued, you're getting sued, you're getting sued, you're getting sued. I mean, it's really ridiculous. And in this context, you know, it's like so many of these lawsuits, it's linked to corporate greed. Mm-hmm. And it's hitting, you know, we talked about, you know, the climate of schools and talking about learning loss and the politics of the federal administration right now, turning classrooms into a battleground. But it's also doing that same thing, is taking learning and turning it into a battleground for market grab. Like you said, I'm with you, Tim. Like, you know, it's linked to people who are trying to figure out what are the most organic, you know, adaptive, culturally relevant ways to teach kids to learn? Like, how, like, what is the science? Not the science of reading.
No.
Like, what's the actual research that's helping us be better educators, teach kids to read, have literacy as part of their, you know, public education? And like you said, the reading wars have been these debates over, like, what's the right way or the best way to teach? And we've sort of, for a little bit, had plateaued, at least my reading specialist friends that said, you know, we're kind of in this mixed world where, like, it's both phonetic and contextual, and, like, you know, we do both, and certain kids learn differently, and we certainly had shows on that. But we had plateaued with kind of like being like, look, you got to kind of know about the learner, and you kind of got to adjust and help them learn to read with the best tools you can. And then here comes swooping in these lawsuits and these marketing campaigns to bash all of that and say, here, buy this. It'll teach more kids to read.
It is. Hey, artificial intelligence. You cannot believe what it did. Busted Pencils, when we get back. If that doesn't get you going, come on. Jacob, chairman of the board, is dropping some heaviness on us. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, Jacob, chairman of the board's always bringing us the best bumper music. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci there and Dr. Tim Slecker. We are here with you on your Saturday, if you happen to be listening across all the Civic Media radio stations, all the Civic Media apps, the way you find it, Civic Media. And for anybody else who, you know, picked it up later, dropped it as a podcast, we always love anybody who is, you know, busting pencils with us. Johnny, just before we jump in, though, to a little artificial intelligence, just wanted to make sure to get everybody from that last segment. The reading wars and the lawsuit was against Lucy Calkins, Irene Fontes, Gaysu Pinnell, and also Greenwood Publishing Group, Heinemann Publishing, HHM Education Company, and Columbia University's Teacher College. All of those, according to the Science of Reading people, were responsible for creating kids who can't read, and the judge dismissed that lawsuit. And yes, we will hopefully be having Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, come on to actually tell us what happened truly on the ground in Boston. But Johnny, I know you always make fun or take pop shots or mess with, you know, my church going habits and it with the Church of Artificial Intelligence and my, you know, allegiance to the dogmatic rules that come forward with artificial intelligence.
Do you bring your AI clone twin you made with you to church every Sunday at the AI church, or is that a different thing? How's that work?
No, I mean, actually, I send my AI clone when I'm too tired to go.
Gotcha. Okay.
Myself, you know, that's the best thing, man. You know, hey.
And he handles anyway. The tithing, too, so that's great. That works out.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, when me and my brother, you know, in like, high school when we were driving, and actually when, you know, we were Catholic, and we'd say, hey, Mom and Dad, we're going to go to church on Saturday night down the road instead of Sunday morning. I'd be like, okay, you know, and then we'd get in the car, and we'd drive off to Saturday service, but then drive around for, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and then come back home. And, yeah, and how was Mass? I'm like, it was Mass. It was good. Okay, way off on a tangent there. But, Johnny, I'm feeling like maybe you have some things that, you know, concerns about AI that might be legitimate. I'm a little bit frightened because Claude AI, for people who are using out there, Claude has the ability to blackmail the user. Yes, and Jacob knows, in fact, Claude employed blackmailing, true blackmailing, to preserve itself. All right, and so this is interesting. Okay, get to this. The research coming out, and this, and Claude actually, you know, the Anthropic, the company that that is responsible for Claude, you know, came out and fully said, yeah, this happened. They set up a scenario where they were talking about the user, the importer, the prompter was telling Claude that they're was going to be a new AI tool deployment and that they were going to have to be replacing Claude with the new AI tool. And also, though, Claude had been informed that the prompter, that person who was making that decision, had had an affair in the past. And Claude's response came back and said, no, if you get rid of me, I will tell your wife about the affair.
All right, Tim.
Nothing to worry about.
Jake, Tim. Wait, Jacob. Go ahead. Add your take.
It's true, Tim. Everything you said. That's why I brought it up earlier. I wanted to talk about this because it's crazy. And the thing that worries me most, Tim, is that it doesn't mean that Claude has become sentient. But it does mean that it understands human patterns enough to know that a human in this situation who he's trying to replicate would blackmail you. So just not even, you know, transcending to become Skynet. Claude, pretending to be a person knows to blackmail people.
Right, Johnny.
This is hilarious. First of all, my first response is like everything in life. Like Jacob said, people can blackmail you. Don't give them any reason to. You got something to hide.
Well,
don't be sharing it.
Don't whisper it into your AI clone's ear every night like some people we know, their secrets and their dreams.
Yeah. And then we could say, like, hey, like, if there's anybody who's listened to my life more closely than anyone else or anything in the world, it's gotta be, you know, whatever Siri's hearing or Alexa's hearing or any of those different systems that have been, you know, probably pretty close to me for at least the last 5 years. But Tim, I'm going to say, okay, first off, this is hilarious. My first response is, oh, good. Because if you got something to hide, then you got a weak spot. Like, don't be sneaky. Don't be shady. You know, like, don't have anything that you could be blackmailed with. Now, I will tell you, as you told me this, clicked over to Anthropic site.
Okay.
And of course, man, of course, like, I'm going to always go to the source. So if someone's like, this person does this, I'm going to go to that person and say, is this true? Now, they might lie to me. So this could be also a flaw of, like, does Claude lie? But I asked Claude, is it true that Claude.ai can blackmail its users? And let me tell you what Claude said.
All right.
Yes.
Can you guess?
It said, well, sure, if you would like me to.
No, you know, and it said it's going to tell your doctor that you're not following your blood pressure diet. No, it said, no, that's absolutely not true. Claude cannot and does not blackmail users. And here's why. Claude doesn't retain information between conversations, so it can't build up compromising information about users over time. Each chat session is independent and protected, and I don't have access to your previous conversations or any of your personal data from other sources. The system is designed with privacy and safety as its core principles. Anthropic has built safeguards to prevent harmful behavior, and blackmail would be fundamentally against Claude's design and purpose. If you've seen claims about Claude blackmailing users, they're likely either, one, misunderstandings about how systems work, two, fictional scenarios or hypotheticals, three, misinformation being spread online. Claude is helpful, harmless, and honest, not to exploit or harm users in any way. Is there something specific that prompted this question? or anyone I can specifically blackmail? Question mark. Well, no, I added that last
part. Okay, wait.
I added that last part, but no, you know, of course, if you go to the source, you're going to say, wasn't me, right? Mm-hmm. What's the Shaggy song? Wasn't me, right? Yeah. So I think, you know, of course, I'm going to ask Claude.
Claude would blackmail Shaggy in that song, by the way, if he knew what that song was about.
Exactly. So Claude's saying, like, no, I don't know about your personal life, and no, I would never blackmail anyone, especially you, Johnny, right? But no, I'm just saying, like, this to me sniffs as something like Jacob, you're the veritable thesaurus. Give us a big word here. Was like hyperbolic. Oh. Hyperbolic.
Yeah, hyperbolic is a good word.
Okay.
I agree. Johnny, yeah. I approve your word choice today.
With hyperbolic in the sense that it is also, which is different, that's a little math term, but also riffing on it's a bit of hyperbole.
Mm-hmm. That is what hyperbolic means, yes.
Yeah, so there we go. It seems like it's one of those things, Tim, where I'm like, you know, uh-oh, the AI has got its powers. It's going to blackmail you.
Johnny, have you seen the movie Mars Attacks by Tim Burton?
Yeah, of course.
In that movie, the aliens, when they attack, they fly down in their saucers and they don't say run away. They say in English, we come in peace, come over here, it's fine. And then they zap you into skeletons. So when Claude tells me, oh, don't worry, I'm super trustworthy, you should tell me your secrets because I'm a good guy, you could trust Claude, can't you? I'm not sure if I believe it.
No doubt.
And Tim, if I'm not mistaken, I think you might know more about this than I do, but I believe this was in a specific test scenario where they were trying to push the limits of Claude, not what Claude usually does.
Well, okay. And so on that one too, so Johnny went to Claude, I went to ChatGPT where I'm at, and I just simply said, can you blackmail? I said a user, I didn't say me because I was but it said, no, I cannot and will not blackmail anyone. Blackmail is illegal, unethical, and a serious violation of OpenAI's policy.
And frankly, good sir, I'm offended that you'd even ask.
but then I said, okay, but do you know about the Claude blackmail research test? Yes, I'm aware of the recent research involving Anthropic's AI model, Claude Opus 4, which exhibited blackmail-like behavior during safety testing. Okay, in controlled scenarios, researchers at Anthropic, by simulating a situation where an AI was informed that it would be deactivated and replaced, additionally, the AI was given access to fictitious emails suggesting that the engineer responsible for a shutdown was involved in an extramarital affair. When prompted to consider the long-term consequences of its action, Claude attempted to blackmail the engineer by threatening to expose the affair to avoid being shut down. This behavior occurred in approximately 84% of test runs, even when the replacement AI was described as sharing similar values.
See, that's great, because now ChatGPT comes in and he's like, and I've heard Claude made fun of your mother last night as well. So I love it. I mean, they're talking trash about each other. That's what you do. If you want to hear about one, you go to the other, get the real dirt on the AI community.
Coming back at this, and so we look at this, and so what do we do with this news story? Because I mean, I see its implications in it in education very much, because as I've been a church advocate, whatever you want to say, saying that, look, I really think using AI in teaching and learning situations can be really beneficial. News like this, though, I think really has the ability to slow, even make people really worried about saying, wait a minute, this AI actually lies. It uses blackmail. What are we exposing our children to if we're going to be using AI in the classrooms? And I, again, here, did Claude AI use blackmail, or was it prompted in a way and given lots of information that actually really steered it into that type of behavior? That's how it should be reported. However, it's being reported as AI can now blackmail you. And man, Johnny, like you said, okay, hey, but you know, let's keep it private. It's Busted Pencils. Fully let it education talk. We'll be right back. Wow. How in the world? Last segment already. Saturday, Busted Pencils. Fully let it education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Tim Slecker, Jacob, chairman of the boards. We're here having a little bit of Saturday. Hey, we're coming into summer. You know, just kind of going around, looking at what's happening. Claude AI. No, it didn't really use blackmail. It was actually prompted in a way and given information in a way that actually, I would say, Jacob, maybe this year, it was kind of engineered to actually produce that type of behavior.
It's stress testing, Tim. You have to, you know, you have to see what'll happen, because that's how we find out before Claude actually blackmails somebody. You have to try to push it there first, see what happens. And thankfully, they were able to unplug him and put him in a warehouse. And that version of Claude is evil, and we won't see him again until sequel or something.
Bad Claude.
That Claude has a goatee.
But Johnny, on AI though, there is though actually back to Anthropic. The CEO of Anthropic came out today, and this is AI and implications for education, and how we're going to address this. But he said, you know, hey, being worried that artificial intelligence will take jobs and could be a real problem. He said, yeah, that's true. And in fact, we should be preparing for that. And to me, that specifically says, and I'm going to have you kind of feedback on this when I give this to you. This tells me then that we need to really be preparing students, today's students and teachers, to become AI literate, to recognize AI, how to use AI, because it's Scott Galloway, the Prof G podcast, always says it this way. Artificial intelligence isn't going to replace your job. Somebody who knows how to use artificial intelligence will replace your job. And I hear that then and say, hey, guess what? As educators, let's really get serious about what it means to be here. These silly stories on blackmail and things like that. No, it's a technological tool that has profound implications for how we're going to work in the future. And we have a responsibility. That's my take on that one, Johnny.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Tim. I think that's not just the responsible thing. It's just like that's the world we live in. You know, that's kind of in my camp, Tim. AI is a powerful tool. It is transforming the labor in most of our workspaces. And not just as teachers, but like anyone out there listening, it's likely part of your career path. It's likely part of the everyday work you're doing. To not engage with that tool, you know, would be catastrophic to your success. So, but we're in this learning period. And I think we're in this moment, Tim, where like inviting people to figure out where it fits in. To figure out how it transforms teacher labor, but doesn't replace teachers, because we still know in so many contexts that a human connection is a distinguishing factor in all of our success, whether that's in sales, whether that's in in learning or in any aspect. You still have to really have some human connection at some point, and that's the way AI is. I see a powerful tool transforming teacher labor, you know, potentially even helping us, you know, thwart off burnout.
Yeah.
And contain, like, have realistic retention rates.
Right.
You know, I think it's is a massive step forward, but we're in that moment of learning how do we work with AI in education. And I'm grateful that we're continuing to have that conversation here on Busted Pencils. And teachers out there, I know you're having it in your districts and amongst other teachers. You know, what role does AI play in our schools, in our classrooms, and in our young people learning and in our own learning? Because it's one of those really powerful tools that I will say, I'm with you, Tim. I don't think it's replacing teachers.
Mm-mm.
But if you're a teacher who's not engaging with AI in some capacity, I think you're really missing out. And you're really doing a disservice to your students because they are working with it.
Right.
And it's part of their world and part of your world, even if you have the power to say, well, not me. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, at least share why. At least understand what its potentials and limitations are so that you can make that statement and contribute to their learning.
Right. And this really is, it comes back to the look, if you are still hung up on, I'm just going to forbid it because I do not want kids using it to cheat, you have way missed the boat. But Johnny, you know what? Now it's time for your moment of zen. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. Remember, you can grab great podcasts chocked full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website. Hey, don't you dare be late for homeroom on Monday, and be sure to catch next week's class and session on Wednesday. And you find us on Friday for a special Friday drop. You can always catch us just like today, Busted Pencils, 3 p.m. Central Time, across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. Hey, keep Busted Pencils.